This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we attend a meet-and-greet event between a local sustainability group and their self-professed progressive state representative. So now, let's go inside the Compass.
I did everything wrong as a rookie. Because I signed on to every controversial, ultra-liberal, ultra-progressive bill as a rookie, and I've driven, you know, there are people in Olympia like, why, you know, do you want to I don't care. And I believe me, you know, other people are paying attention, and there are other people that disagree with my philosophy. So I've done everything. I've signed on to the state bank bill. I've signed on to the taxing of oil tankers up and down the Strait of Juan de Fuca. Oh, yeah. You know, everything that would move what I think move our state forward, I've signed on to. And then some.
That's 24th District Representative Mike Chapman, outlining his unabashedly progressive legislative agenda for a decidedly friendly audience composed mainly of the Steering Committee for the Environmental Sustainability Organization Local 2020 at a meet-and-greet get-together held at a private home out in the woods down near Cape George one recent afternoon. After an hour of wine, cheese, and chit-chat, the about 20 attendees took seats in a circle around the spacious living room for introductions before the customs officer turned Clallam County Commissioner turned progressive Democrat legislator launched into a rather lengthy soliloquy on his political philosophy.
Take this how you will. If I serve 2 years or 20, I'm going to be just fine. Because I'm going to do the right thing and I'm going to do what I believe and I'm going to live by the principles. And if that works out to electoral success or not, I'm not going to change. I represent three counties, so from Port Townsend to Ocean Shores, Hoquiam, Grays Harbor, all of Clallam. It's a big district. And I had precincts that were 80%+ for Hillary Clinton and other precincts that were 60-65% for Donald Trump. No matter whose group or whose home I was in, I say the same thing. I do not tailor my message to my audience. I'll be honest. I'll answer any question to the best of my ability. But I'm on a quest. I've decided if I'm going to do this, and I decided this when I ran for this office, having done 16 years at local government, which is really different because it's potholes and it's funding sheriffs and it's making sure the jail has toilet paper and, you know, I mean, all those things. But when I decided to run for the state legislature, I said, you know what I really want to do is, I was as cynical about politics, I think, as a lot of people are, which is probably why you've kind of shied away from politics, because there's a real cynicism. So I've decided to do two things. I decided to channel my inner Howard Dean. I won't scream, but I have a few times if I feel an injustice. But I really decided I was going to represent the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party.
Yay!
Good.
And I think nowadays it may be seen as the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. When I decided to leave local government, and I have two kids in college, my wife owns a small business, I went from representing one county to representing almost three for half the money. So it was a 50% pay cut. I was actually excited about that. I was actually excited to say, nobody can accuse me of lining my pockets. And that I would be free and unfettered and able to take on issues of importance. The other thing that I've chosen to do in politics is, as an elected official, it's voluntary to participate in the public pension plan. And I have chosen not to participate. So I will not have a pension when my political career ends from you, the taxpayer. And the reason that I've chosen not to do that, for one thing, no one can accuse me of lining my own pockets for this, but I'm not willing to take something that is not accessible to the people I represent. How we have a great state. I'm a Washington native. When I wake up in the morning in Olympia and I walk and I go to the Capitol and I walk into the rotunda, I really do ask myself, how in the hell did a kid raised by a single mom, born in White Center, South Seattle, end up representing the most beautiful part of the state of Washington in Olympia.
Wow.
And there have been a few nights at 10 o'clock at night as I've wandered around and chatted with the janitors, mopping the floors, and just looking throughout the rotunda that I asked myself, you know, how did I get here? And if people really knew, why would they send me here? But I mean, there's this awesome responsibility that comes with being an elected official at a higher level. The advice you get in Olympia is you kind of lay low, kind of go along to get along, don't make any waves. And I've decided that I'm not interested in that. And it's not who I am as a person. And if you knew my background, you'd know that that's not that there's no way I've ever lived my life that way.
How can we help you the most?
You like what you're hearing already?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Now you know why we invited you here.
Well, it helps to know that I have friends that support what I'm doing. There are lots of folks that will weigh in on other side. It helps to know that you're willing to listen and I'm willing to hear back from you. This is about your representative working hard to represent you and your values, but to take our great state, which is a great state, and as a native, I'm very proud of my state, and that's why I was so excited to work with the students on the bottle bill, because you know what? Growing up in the family of a single mom, those bottles that I collected and took to the store for a nickel, they were how I got my candy bars. You know, they were how I bought my Slurpees at 7-Eleven. They were how I got a new inner tube for my bike tire, because my mom didn't have the money. We grew up, literally today, I will not eat macaroni and cheese, because I swear, my wife tries, she makes great macaroni and cheese, homemade for years, 27 years of marriage. She's like, I make it homemade. I'm like, I can't eat it. I grew up on boxed macaroni and powdered cheese. So you know what really irritates me and will really get my dander? When someone says, well, people just need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps.
Yeah, right.
You know what? I was willing to pull myself up by my bootstraps, but I needed someone to help me get a pair of boots first. Right?
Yeah. Like, I think we need to be more than just your friends. Yeah. I think we need to work with you and work for you, Mike, but we need to be instructed about how to do that. When Larry got on the local 2020 board, he was an ex-county commissioner, and I'm like, okay, let's get some political action going here. And it's like, you know, Students for Sustainability have their bottle bill going. It's like, I don't know what to do. I actually don't know what to do. And I feel like, put us to work.
You're all here in Jefferson County, and you're all doing amazing things to move the community forward, and you're supporting people like me, and you're supporting people like your other representatives. But you all have to have connections like in other parts of the state, and I feel like sometimes we don't, like, you're not going to have to convince me to support a state bank because I put my name on the law, but what we need to do is convince other legislators in other parts of the state. So as you make friendships and can broaden your base across the state to weigh in other legislative districts. And I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but the House of Representatives has a one-vote majority. It's 50-48. So it's very close. Every one of our 50. We have a saying in our caucus, we're 50 strong. And I'm on the whip team. I'm an assistant majority whip, and so I get to do vote counting. And we have to hold our 50 votes to move our issues forward. And we moved our budget forward. We're going to move our tax plan forward, which is a very progressive tax plan, the most progressive tax plan introduced in the Washington State Legislature in decades, if not maybe potentially ever. The Senate's the other way. It's 25-24. It's 24 Republicans and 25 Democrats, but there's one Democrat who caucuses and gives control to the Republicans. But there's a couple of special elections in the Senate this summer. You know, I hope people from Jefferson County get involved in some of those and get over there and bus over there and doorbell and that sort of thing, so we can maybe turn that around. But as you meet around, if you travel in your circles and you know people in other legislative districts, I think too, I got to be honest, there was a letter to the editor in today's Peninsula Daily News. I was at another group with Representative Theringer and Squim. We had about 150 people, and he was there, and he wrote a letter talking about the Wild Olympics campaign and thanking Steve and I for our support. You can't tell. To see a letter to the editor in support of something that has been controversial and a little bit denigrated, and there was a letter recently by a former county commissioner in Clallam County saying how terrible Wild Olympics was and how we have to reopen the Forest Service to logging. That letter from Mark in today's Daily News meant the world. So letters to the editors in support mean the world. And because I think it's you know that that person's taking a strong public stance in support of a position. So those are a couple of concrete things that really just come to mind. Emails are nice. And how many of you have emailed me, and how many of you have gotten a response back from me?
A personal response.
Yeah. Yeah.
How often do you get those?
So the other thing that I do is I was listening to a podcast during the campaign, and one of my many drives home late at night. And it was an interview with a California state representative. And the California state representative was talking about how he gave out his personal cell phone number. And the interviewer was saying, holy smokes. I mean, don't you just get inundated? And he said, you know what? I do. I kind of have a 24 to 48 hour rule that I always get back to every email personally, every text message personally, and every cell phone call personally. And so I just decided, you know, there's another way to show folks. And so if you get an email back from me, I wrote it. If I know someone's interested in a bill, I'll shoot people a personal text.
I appreciate that.
And if you call me, and my cell phone, it's easy. It's 360-477-1131. My point being is that I'm here as a public servant. I need to hear from people, and I want to have dialogue.
Mike, Local 2020 is part of a national network of similar type groups, and along Puget Sound, the Salish Sea, there may be anywhere between 30 to 60 organizations like us.
The network he's talking about is Transition Towns. TransitionUS.org shows you the towns all across the country that are transition towns. We were the 111th of 160 in the United States.
Wow.
And they're all progressive. They're all communities localizing, you know, working around localization. What do we have to do to get more politically active?
I had a conversation with someone the other day that was frustrated with some of the, because parties kind of go through these there's been some reorganization in Jefferson, and Clallam County's had some really struggles, and so there's some frustration. And I think I gave them what I thought was a pretty good piece of advice. What I said was, I think it's up to every individual to figure out the best way to spend their time and talent. There's a group called Whole Washington that's looking at the whole issue of single payer, and should it be an initiative? There's another group that's been working on family leave and medical leave for employees. And there's legislation in Olympia, and there's negotiations going on between union leaders and business leaders and members of the legislature, but that may move into an initiative. A lot of these initiatives started as legislation at the legislature. The legislature sometimes can only go so far, so fast. First of all, it's a truncated process. We're only part-time. We're only in Olympia part-time. Number two is there's a lot of competing interests. And number three, there aren't a lot of bold legislators. There are a lot of people that are more cautious. They come from districts that are more swing districts, and some people are just more cautious by nature. And so sometimes what's important is for the legislators initially to put their name to legislation and begin the conversation, but then a lot of times groups will take it. The minimum wage increase that we passed is a classic case in point. It was very close to passing in Olympia, and it was a much more scaled back plan. And the business community and the business lobby was engaging with folks. And at the last minute, the business lobby said, you know what, we just can't go there. We're not going to support a minimum wage increase. Well, then the activists picked up the piece of legislation and ran with it, and they decided to heck with the scaled down version the legislature was fussing over, and finally walked away. They went back to the original piece of legislation and put it on the ballot, and we now have one of the most progressive minimum wage bills on the books. My point being is that if a state bank or single payer or carbon tax or a oil tax or whatever the issue is, as long as you're having legislators put their name to it and start the legislation, there are many groups that will pick that up and run with it. If we don't get a bill this session on family and medical leave, we're looking at 120 days of family and medical leave for employees around the state through a state-run insurance plan, through a payroll deduction. Now, how cool would that be? But if we don't get it through the legislature, it'll probably end up as an initiative. And so sometimes it's just as important to get the legislation moving forward, to get it introduced. And if you can get it introduced in both houses, the Senate and the House, if you can get hearings, you've now built a lot of political momentum for good progressive legislation that other groups can then take and move. So that's another thing that we can do together, is that if you have ideas, come and meet with me, come and work on it. And I can get, I have the access to the professionals who can draft legitimate legislation in the proper format. And once it's introduced, if it doesn't go fast enough, far enough, quick enough in the legislative session, it can often become a local initiative. It might be a local pilot project that we go back to the city of Port Townsend on. It might be someone that says, you know what, let's run this as a statewide initiative. So we have this kind of ability to be a team, a tag team. Can you imagine the excitement behind a recycling bottle bill in Washington?
Initiated by high school students.
Are you kidding? I mean, I couldn't ask for a more wonderful experience. We're building the next generation of engaged citizens while looking at something that this state once did, went away from because probably, I'm excited to hear what you guys have found out.
Ashley told me on the way out here that the Students for Sustainability are doing spring break homework of looking at the bills from three previous states, so they're doing their homework on spring break, no less.
I was at another group, and I just mentioned it in passing, and I mean, the whole crowd, it just was like, got a huge round of applause, and I think it was just as much because it was working with the next generation, but it's also an issue. Another bill that I'm looking at I won't probably get it introduced this session, but plastic water bottles. You know, we don't tax them. They're not subject to sales tax. And you're all familiar with the Discover Pass, which allows you have to pay the yearly to, well, we know a lot of families can't afford the $30 for the Discover Pass. So for the same amount of money, if you put just sales tax on plastic water bottles, you would raise as much money, give or take, within just what is the whole Discover Pass program. Let's be honest, we live in one of the last few places on the face of the earth where our water coming out of our tap is actually pretty trustworthy. And if we put sales tax on a plastic water bottle, we could do away with the Discover Pass, which would continue that next generation of building the love and the respect for public lands, because the pressure's coming from the federal government to have public lands be returned to the states so the states can open them up for commercial development and sell them off. Another crazy idea that I have we're going to move forward with a carbon tax, and it may or may not occur through Olympia, but it will certainly come forward. But one of the ideas of a carbon tax is, think of this, we have lots of small landowners who have anywhere from 20 to 60 to 120 acres of trees. And we know that generally small forest landowners, they don't get rich growing trees. And a lot of them are at a cycle or a point where they maybe have one more harvest, but because it's not a lot, and because of the excess costs and the permitting, and if they have any kind of stream, it's not a lucrative business. You have to own thousands of acres to manage timber for a profit. Mm-hmm. Small forest landowners. So we have a program in the state where we pay if a small forest landowner sets aside buffers along riparian areas, they can get 50% of the appraised value timber. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's my crazy idea. When we have a carbon tax, some of that money should be set aside to pay for the timber to stay in timber,
right,
and, as it were, make a down payment for your next future generations, the next round of old growth forests. And you can't tell me there aren't people by the thousands across our state who would say, you know what, I'll do it. I want to set this aside forever. I have relatives that would do that in a heartbeat. Mm. If they knew they never had to harvest the timber, they'd set it aside. We have the ability. We talk about the loss of old growth forests. Well, the reason we have a loss of old growth forests is we've quit talking about the next generation of old growth forests. We've not.
Our land trust has done a great job of that here with farmers. And also timber growers.
Washington has to be a leader. We cannot continue to settle for mediocrity in the political arena. We have got to be a leader, and we've got to be proud that we're a leader.
One of the things that got all of us progressives in trouble this last cycle, national cycle, was that we didn't acknowledge the fact that there's at least half the country who do not see the world the way we see it. So we're having to deal here with a different culture. And somehow, people like you have to figure out how to bring up things that they like too, or that they like and we don't. I mean, things that are just, I'm not sure how to do it, but I mean, they feel like their right to use water has been taken away. I got a lot of relatives over there. They can't buy the stove they want to buy. They have to go back from their streams and lose a lot of land. And all these rules and regulations, which we see a purpose for, but many of them just see it as government interference in their lives.
You know,
somehow we have to deal with that.
One thing that's important is that most legislation does have bipartisan support. And most legislators will look for a member of the other party to sign on to their bill. Some bills don't get that, and they're just too viewed as too partisan. But most of what gets passed is bipartisan. There is a fairly collegial atmosphere. I have an advantage over most legislators. Most legislators are either the I-5 legislators. I mean, their districts are just solid blue. They don't have to deal with rural areas. It's just and they're really concerned with homelessness and social safety net, which we all are. And then the Eastern Washington legislators are such deep red that their biggest fear is losing in a primary. And most of those districts ended up with two Republicans battling it out in the general election, and they're just solidly red districts. You answer how does someone like me reach across? Well, you know what I did most of this last summer? So I doorbelled Grays Harbor. Because I knew I had a pretty good chance after the primary, looking at the numbers, that I was going to do pretty well in Jefferson County. Thank you very much. And having served 16 years in Clallam County, I kind of figured, just true.
That's a name recognition.
Yeah, they either liked me or they didn't, and me knocking on their door probably wasn't going to change that. I mean, I'd been their commissioner for 16 years, and then the primary I had solid numbers, but I had actually lost in Grays Harbor in the primary. And so that not only upset me, but I figured they don't know me down there. So that was a county that voted for Donald Trump, and there were precincts that were heavily. But in knocking on doors, you know what I kept coming back to the idea of, I understand we have high unemployment in Grays Harbor. I understand that the economy is not working for many of you. I understand that you have concerns. I said, you know what? I have those same concerns, and they're the same concerns across the district. And one of the things that I kept coming back to is a very regressive tax structure. I said, why do you think we have double-digit unemployment in rural Washington? And I said, well, we keep doing the same thing over and over again. We have high property tax as a percentage of income. We have a high sales tax, which hurts low and middle class. And we tax our small business owners on their gross income and make it so difficult for them to invest and to grow their businesses. And that's one of the things what I took back to Olympia. And so that's why our tax plan is the most progressive in many, many years. That reaches people understood that. They're like, yeah, these property taxes and sales taxes, and we don't have any income growth. We also talked a lot about the respect and the need for family wage jobs. And I started talking. I said, labor unions are often denigrated, but all a labor union did is fight for a living wage, right, and a decent benefit package. And I said, you know, that's what I'm going to fight for in Olympia, to bring back, to make the tax structure work a little bit better for those of us in rural Washington, to make the regulatory environment work a little bit better, a little friendlier. You may have regulations you have to live under, but we can make it a little friendlier. The state agency can be a little friendlier, and there are some initiatives. And I can, as a legislator, I can be a buffer in that. But also to promote family wage and living wage jobs in the state. And to look at public infrastructure investments. Three counts. One, two, three. Oh, Scott added up forever. Either that or he's just waving at me.
Richard brought up something that's really annoyed me for a while, and I know that you're aware of it, and that's the PRTPO, the Peninsula Regional Transportation Planning Organization, not having authority over DOT direction on the peninsula here. And if we don't get a handle on the DOT, they're going to fix the highway system to be four lanes and six lanes, one intersection, one little section at a time, just like they've done between Squim and Port Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In spite of what progressive ideas came out of the Connect Washington group from the tribes, connecting us to the rest of the state through an excellent transit system, is there some way to put the PRTPO back on top, like the RTPOs are on the rest of the state, where the DOT has to actually listen instead of just being advisory?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I actually chaired that. You know that. I mean, yeah. You were there. And I chaired the Peninsula Regional Planning Transportation Organization to basically help DOT plan for the next generation of transportation improvements. And I chaired that for a number of years. And it was frustrating at times. And good ideas would come forward in the DOT staff. That's why I got on Transportation Committee, to kind of take a look at it from a different perspective. And I'm figuring out the best way that I can be effective in that. And I think so much of it is we've got to think less about more lanes on the highways and more about community projects. And one of them is fish passage barrier removal. So that's a DOT funded, but there are a lot of culverts under state highways and county highways and city highways that we need to pull those culverts out and replace them with the box bridges so that the water can run free, so that it's provided. And those are good projects for the community. They're good for the environment. And when they do that, they can add a trail, they can add a bike lane, they can widen it as they go through that area. And I think that we've got to work with our local governments more and get off the big highway projects and put those dollars into our local communities. The roundabouts are great ideas. We need roundabouts everywhere because they work. Yeah, it's a big ship, and so much of the projects are Seattle. I mean, we have tunnel projects and I-5 projects and I-405 projects. And, rural Washington kind of got stiffed under the last transportation gas tax. We really did. A couple of other things. You recently heard of Congress made it so that internet providers can sell our browsing history.
Yeah. Yes.
And to wonder how things can work in Olympia, and sometimes things can kind of... So tomorrow, a number of us will be co-sponsoring a bill so that Washington won't let it occur in Washington State.
Wow.
And, you know, that's one that's going to draw, you know, what you would consider as more progressive members from Democrats, but it's also drawing very conservative Republicans. And that's libertarians from Eastern Washington. And so that's going to be an exciting piece of legislation moving forward as well. Some of us are fighting the Real ID Act. And I don't know if you're aware of that, but the requirement under Homeland Security that Washington State has to issue a special driver's license. And what it means is, not only is it a special driver's license, but it means that those who aren't citizens, their driver's license is going to look different than everybody else's. If you're not a citizen, potentially the federal government wants it marked as non-citizen. Mm-hmm. We believe, many of us in Olympia, and I'm fighting this one really hard, but I think I'm going to lose. I think it's going to go through. But again, we're trying to find ways to kind of push back on the federal government too. And I think those are some areas that we can work together as well. The only other thing I'd say is thanks.
With 24th District State Representative Mike Chapman at a meet and greet with sustainability activists from Local 2020, this is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m., exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.